beginning with the governors and then moving on to the national level. And it was all about developing human resource capital, and that's what they're going to do with our children. And they didn't want to let them learn traditional facts and things that had worked in the past. In fact, what they wanted to do is move with the winds of change and go for a total transformation of our society into what they called a new era. And once again, they talked primarily about producing a new human resource capital. And this is what they're talking about when they're talking about our children. There's a real evil side to all of this. It has to do with transformational Marxism. It has to do with the dialectical process. It has to do with what I talked about before, the thesis, antithesis, synthesis. It has to do with traditionalism being replaced with a transitional phase. And this is the same as when they offer up something that, you know, is against your beliefs and values, you react against it. And then they move you on to a transformational state. And that's when you've reached this new utopia, so to speak.
Well, don't you think there's a spiritual component behind this, though, this effort to destroy the moral structure of our society and the moral beliefs of our children?
Oh, absolutely. Now, the thing that's interesting is that we were drawn into this through education, and we fought this for several years over in Washington State. We eventually moved to Idaho, and we were in our church, and my wife's mother was dying of cancer, and we had kind of fallen out of touch with church. We were still attending on Sundays, but we weren't doing much else, and we were going back and forth to Washington State taking care of Michelle's mom. This all happened over about a two-and-a-half-year process. After she passed away, we came back, and we decided we wanted to get re-involved in church on a more serious level. I attended the men's studies, Michelle attended the women's studies, and our daughter attended the youth group. What we found was that our pastor was pushing this model or program that was really similar to this TQM that we had been fighting against in education in Washington State. TQM stands for Total Quality Management. And I was involved in that study. Praising the name of Peter Drucker, the man who had formed his mind.
No, I think it's so important. We tell our listeners who Peter Drucker is, because he is one of the keys of this whole thing. He, along with Peter, with Rick Warren, have really transformed American Christianity.
Well, I'll go there in just a second.
Right.
Michelle was involved in the women's studies, and that was using Richard Foster's devotional classics, and our daughter was involved in the youth programs, and they were using Rob Bell's Pneuma videos. All of these three areas, whether they were women or men's or children's studies, were involved mystics, what we call mystics. Peter Drucker, to die for just a moment, was the father of TQM. He's the man who coined the word total quality business management system. He and William Deming took a thing called general systems theory, which was devised by Ludwig von Bertalanffy. He was a German scientist, and general systems theory says that all of the world and everything in it is devised of systems. And what you do with general systems theory is you have a self-correcting, self-assessing, and perfecting system that works within any system. And it is very effective, and Peter Drucker's management tools have been extremely effective. But the thing about general systems theory is that it's evolutionary based. It's not based on biblical values and principles. It's evolutionary based. And it's purpose-driven, hence Rick Warren and his purpose-driven life. Rick Warren and Peter Drucker were great friends. He had Peter Drucker to his house numerous times. Peter Drucker called Rick Warren the pastor of perpetual revival. And the whole basis of the dialectical process is to have constant and continued change. Another leader in the emergent church, so to speak, would be Brian McLaren, and one of his books is All Things Must Change. And Rick Warren echoes this, and he talks about how the church has to be in constant revival, and people have to be changed into knowledge workers. Well, this is much like your human resource capital model that Peter Drucker had for business management systems. Peter Drucker and William Deming can be remembered as the people who brought this type of system to the Japanese economy after World War II. Their economy was shattered after the bombing raids that the United States did in order to make them surrender. And so they took this general systems theory, the total quality management business systems, and they revived the Japanese economy. And for those of your listeners that are older that can remember the 1950s and 1960s when America was flooded with this cheap Japanese goods, transistor radios and the like, and we used to make jokes about it. Well, you know, 15 or 20 years later, we weren't laughing anymore because the Japanese got really good at making everything, including automobiles. And so they became a major competitor. Peter Drucker and William Deming offered these same solutions to American government, American medicine, and American industry, which initially turned them down. But as time went by, they started embracing these techniques, and now you can see this general systems theory in almost all of corporate society in America. It's highly effective, and it works. Then along came Marilyn Ferguson in 1980. She was a New Age writer, a theosophist. And she wrote a book called The Aquarian Conspiracy, and she talked about how these other three pillars of American society had been taken over, but we still had two more to go. We had education and the church. And another New Age writer, Alice Bailey, wrote a book called Problems of Humanity. In the last chapter on the church, she wrote about how the rotting corpse of Christianity would eventually have to be kicked out of the way. And what she was talking about is those traditional believers who believed in the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ and his atoning work on the cross and his blood sacrifice and his virgin birth. So the gospel of Jesus Christ is out the window, and the gospel of Christ consciousness is what we're looking for to change society.
And, of course, what they really want to do is bring not Jesus Christ, but the Christ into power in our society today. And these people are not way off the wall. They are really the mainstream of so much of what is going on in our society today. And they have so much power that most people have never even heard of these movements, and yet they permeate every aspect of our society. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, yeah, I think that would be an excellent statement. And some of your listeners might remember some of these things that have happened recently in our history in the last few months. If you remember back in October, the Muslim leaders in the Middle East were talking to the Pope, and they were getting upset because his push towards an ecumenical movement was slowing down. And he said, it's okay, we're all worshiping the same God, and it'll happen. And then George Bush, our president, not to be outdone, for the next 2 weeks, three times on national media, got out there and said on TV that we're all worshiping the same God, whether we're Christian, Buddhist, Hindu, Muslim, whatever.
Well, how can an evangelical Christian say that the Muslims are worshiping the same God? Certainly the Jews, you might argue, were at least waiting for the Messiah to come, and Christianity is an offshoot of Judaism. But the God of the Muslim is the moon god. And it's really, of course, a very wicked and horrible God. And I think really where people get into trouble, Mitchell, is they don't understand that there really are people who worship an entirely different God, and that God is not imaginary. He's very real, and he has tremendous power. And, of course, they're aligned with the wrong God.
Well, what's happening is that there's an ecumenical movement, and that's what the purpose-driven and the emergent church are all about. It's about bringing all religions together under one roof, and to have this Christ consciousness, because what's going to happen in their understanding is that we're all going to evolve into a higher Christ consciousness, and we're going to do away with all the problems that society has had to deal with in the past. And a lot of these problems have to do with our religious beliefs and values.
But of course, there are those people like Barbara Marx Hubbard who write about the necessity of killing off that 0.25% of the world that won't evolve to the higher level.
Well, and Rick Warren talks about in his Purpose-Driven Life, he says there are pillars in your church, those older Christians and traditionalists that still believe certain things, and if they don't come along with a new program, you have to get rid of them.
Hold that thought. Go right ahead.
Well, Rick Warren was talking about getting rid of the pillars in his church, those that hold up the tides of change, those that still believe in the old traditional values and beliefs. And getting rid of those pillars in your church is the same as getting rid of those pillars in your society. Some of the pillars in our society that your listeners can remember that we got rid of were prayer in the public schools, for example, in 1962 and 63, and the Vitel versus Engels case, or getting rid of the Ten Commandments in society and not being able to display them in public, and that was the Stone versus Graham case in 1980. Chief Justice Roy Moore in Alabama would be a more recent example of this, where he tried to display the Ten Commandments in the State House, and it wasn't the state government that told him he couldn't do it. It was the federal government.
And it was George Bush did everything he could to destroy Justice Roy Moore. In fact, he rewarded the man who actually destroyed the career of Judge Roy Moore, our president, who professes to be a Christian. Why would he have done something like that?
Well, it's just a continued war against what we would call true Christianity.
Right.
Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7, why does the path of destruction and many shall follow, and narrow is the gate of righteousness, and few shall find it. And then in Matthew 10 he said, I came not to bring peace but a sword. Mother against daughter, father against son, mother against daughter-in-law. And so what we're dealing with here is we're going to have to make a decision for Jesus Christ on a personal level. What these people are after is they're after a society that doesn't even have Jesus Christ in their mindset. They're in a transformational state, and if they can get rid of truth, then they can bring in whatever they want. Society hates to have a vacuum, and if Christianity goes, then something else is going to take its place. Brian McLaren says that all things must change. Rick Warren says that we have to have a perpetual revival. General systems theory is based on the process of continued change, the dialectical process, transformational Marxism. They all have the same goal, and that is to constantly change society and move it along to a predetermined outcome. And whether you're talking about outcome-based education or outcome-based religion, that's what we're talking about really in truth, is outcome-based religion, where the outcome is predetermined and they need to move a large group of people along in a peaceable way. And they use different techniques like Delphi techniques and the dialectical processes, where they make large groups of people get together and discuss the things that they need to have to change society for the better. And they'll put change agents in the groups and direct these people along to a predetermined course, making them think that they had something to do with the change in the first place. But it's all been pre-planned and pre-outlined. And that's what we're having on the national level now.
And that's what they're doing in our churches, in our so-called purpose-driven churches, where Rick Warren has actually indoctrinated over 400,000 ministers and church people in his form of transformation. And the average Christian doesn't understand. His church is being used to change their attitude towards God and family and country. And of course, you know, the people like their church. They feel comfortable there. Their friends go to that church. And they can't really believe that their minister, who they believe in and trust, has actually been indoctrinated, and the process will end up at the destruction of our nation and Christianity. And I don't think even a lot of the ministers don't even understand what they're into. Do you?
Well, they're banking on the fact that the relationships, if you have six or seven good relationships in your church, that you'll put up with all this change, that you won't leave, that you'll just go along to get along. And so relationships are really important in all of this.
And of course, you're not allowed to differ, and if you do differ or challenge, you're out. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Mr. was just talking about the attitude in the churches today. If you don't go along with the minister, if you have a different idea and you dare to express it, they'll throw you right out of that church, and then you'll, of course, be almost separated totally from all of your friends who are there. And, of course, you will be, they will be told certainly not to have anything to do with you. You're a troublemaker, and you'll be targeted, and they know exactly what they're doing. This is part of a carefully planned program, and, of course, they want to get rid of people in the church who won't go along, who object to the wonderful changes in the music in our churches, who object to the wonderful change in the theology that is being preached in our churches, who object to this perfect driven life that is going to transform the world. Not God going to transform the world. We, the church, are going to transform the world. And I think that sort of takes God out of that supernatural realm and just puts him into a closet someplace while the purpose-driven church transforms the world.
Yes, I wanted to read just a couple of quotes here from Alice Bailey, and I'd like to read them out of education for a new age, and then I'll move into problems of humanity in the church.
Well, would you like to tell our listeners, sir, who Alice Bailey was? Because she is a pivotal individual in what's going on today, and most Christians have never heard of Alice Bailey.
Well, Alice Bailey was one of the three New Age queens of the 20th century. Alice Bailey, Agnes Sanford, and Marilyn Ferguson were three of the most prolific writers for the Theosophist Society in the 20th century. Alice Bailey was the most prolific writer of the three, and she wrote over 20 volumes.
But did she write them? I thought they were channeled to her by a spirit.
That's right.
She thought they were cool.
They were channeled, and you're correct about that.
And I think it's so important that these people are in contact with beings from another dimension who will channel through them. And Alice Bailey acknowledged that she was having her writings channeled to her by a spirit. She called it the Tibetan or Jwa Kul, something of the sort. But go right ahead.
Well, and that's exactly right, and you're right on target with that. In reference to our children and what they would be taught, that they would also be taught to think in terms of world relationship and of their nation in relation to other nations. This covers training for citizenship, for parenthood, and for world understanding. It is basically a psychological method and should convey an understanding of humanity in general. And then she went on to say, an international system of education developed in joint conference by broad-minded teachers and educational authorities in every country is today a crying need and would provide a major asset in preserving world peace. And then she talked about world citizenship. And that's something that we're moving towards today. In our local paper last year, they talked about how all the elementary school kids were proudly learning how to become world citizens. Not U.S. citizens, but world citizens. And that this should be a goal of enlightened people everywhere and the hallmark of the spiritual man. And so you see how they blend education and spiritual issues together. And in these three, you have right relations. And right relations is a key word in her lingo. Established between education, religion, and politics, which education, religion, and politics constitute the three-legged stool of Peter Drucker's plan of general systems theory and total quality management. And so what we have here is we have a blending of the secular and the Christian scope of our society. And it's a holistic system, and it's very evil and all-encompassing. And this is something that Alice Bailey wrote about in Problems of Humanity. And she's talking about our attitudes about our Christian traditional Christian beliefs. And she says, the more ancient the scripture, the greater necessarily the distortion, the doctrine of a vengeful God, the doctrine of retribution in some mystical hell, the teaching that God only loves those who interpret him in terms of some particular school of theological thought, the symbolism of the blood sacrifice, which she's against, the appropriation of the cross as a Christian symbol, the teaching about the virgin birth and the picture of an angry deity only appeased by death are unhappy results of man's own thinking. And so you see right off the bat that she's against basically the gospel of Jesus Christ. The death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, his atoning work on the cross and blood sacrifice and his virgin birth. She stands, you know, completely against all that.
But the thing is, she is not an atheist. My belief is that she and the other theosophists worship a different God. That is why they hate Christianity. Until people understand that there really are people who worship a different God, none of this really makes any sense.
Well, you know, it doesn't. And people just have not picked up on the connection between the theosophists and the educators. You know, we had the Cultural Revolution of the 1960s. We had the hippie revolution. Everybody was against anything that was traditional. And we thought that that kind of died off in the late 60s, early 70s. But what happened is the hippies put on coats and ties and they simply became part of the mainstream. And so later on, in the late 70s and early 80s, when we saw the gradual demise of these traditional Protestant and Catholic denominations as they were losing members left and right, we saw the rise of the evangelical church and the church growth movement. Seeker-sensitive friendly movement. And what we didn't realize is that these people that had these other beliefs and values, these new age beliefs, new thought or new spirituality, simply tied themselves to the coattails of this new...
Hold that thought.
Movement.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening is Mitchell Wright, and Mitchell, go right ahead. You're doing fine.
Well, we were talking about the seeker sense of the friendly movement and the church growth movement that really got its wind in the late 70s and early 80s. And this was the beginnings of the emergent church movement, the purpose-driven movement, the mega-church movement. And, you know, it was by no accident that Rick Warren's church started in his living room, and now he has 20,000 people in his congregation, and then he's running around the globe talking to heads of state and pushing his global peace program. This has nothing to do with the gospel of Jesus Christ. It has to do with dominionism and kingdom theology and taking over the world for whatever reason we deem necessary in order to make it a nicer place to live in, to have a higher Christ consciousness, to evolve ourselves into a higher order. And this stands squarely against the gospel of Jesus Christ. And Jesus said in Matthew chapter 28, verse 19, that we were to go onto the world and teach the nations the gospel, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. And lo, I am with you always. And so our job is simply to present the gospel of Jesus Christ, not to take over the world for Jesus Christ, because he talks about in the Bible how the world will degenerate into world war and just, you know, fall apart. We're not going to create a utopia here for him to return to. And so a lot of the biblical mandates and beliefs and truths that are in the Bible are changed subtly by these people. And you get up a feeling of self-pride and you think that you're going to do all these good things for the world, and in fact you're being manipulated, you're being Delphied, which is what the term is, into a predetermined outcome. Rick Warren's purpose-driven church, as you said, has trained over 400,000 pastors, and they've sent them worldwide to promote this movement. And this involves a lot of churches and a lot of pastors, not just on a national level, but on a worldwide level, all working through UNESCO. And this is being propagated primarily through this World Peace Program, that five-point program that Rick Warren has. My wife, Michelle, has a whole lot of particulars. I've been kind of talking in generalities, but she has a lot of particulars in this area, and I think what I'll do is I'll hand her over to you now and let her pick up and give you some more specific pieces of information that would be good for your listeners.
All right, fine. I think the message really is so vitally important, because it's impossible to understand any of the things that are going on today unless you understand that behind this is a spiritual battle between those who believe in traditional Christianity and those who, of course, would destroy traditional Christianity. But, of course, you don't destroy it from without. You destroy it from within. And they've done a magnificent job of infiltrating our schools and infiltrated our seminaries and infiltrated our churches. We'll be right back here with... Well, this is Dr. Stan. We have with us right now Michelle Wright, who's going to be talking. This is Mitchell's husband. Mitchell is the husband and Michelle is the wife. But before we go on, Michelle, would you like to get your website out or any information about you, your ministry along with your husband?
Well, Dr. Stan, no, we don't have a website as such, but I can recommend some good websites, and that would be Lighthouse Trails, and it's www.lighthousetrailsresearch.com.
All right, or just whitelighthousetrails.org. They're wonderful, wonderful information. We recommend their information. They're one of the few websites where you have people who are a number of people, such as Mitchell and Michelle Wright, who are getting the information. But lighthousetrailsresearch.com, is it?
Yes. And then another one would be Barrett Chose Ministries.
Right.
And that's crossroad.2.
And that's T-O, and that's for Tonga. It goes crossroad.to, dot com. Crossroad.to, that's just crossroad.to. Go ahead.
Another one would be Heriscope, and that's a play off the word heresy, and it's www.heriscope.blogspot.com.
Okay.
And you have Dennis Cuddy as a guest on your program, correct?
Right.
And then another one would be Steel on Steel with John Loeffler.
Right.
I also can recommend a book called Faith Undone by Roger Oakland. And these are good resources for people to research on their own.
All right, fine. Well, I certainly concur with all of your recommendations. Go right ahead.
Okay. Well, I can tell you, too, that the connection that I found between education reform and restructuring and the church reform type stuff would be the group called Leadership Network. And in fact, when my husband was reading the book, Halftime by Bob Buford, I remember coming into his office and I said, what are you reading this book for? And so then I said, don't you remember? This is Peter Drucker. This is Leadership Network. And so what happened was that we were trying to present some of our concerns to our church that was a conservative Bible church. And we just would, politely tell them, some of the problems. And then pretty soon we found out that actually we were kicked out on the sidewalk. It was sad. And what happened is that we were disfellowshipped. This is going on across the country where people are asking simple questions and then they are pretty much booted out for, not going along with the program. I think that we were kind of like the spoke in the wheel, I guess, and we were the clog in the wheel. And I started researching some of the leadership programs that the pastors and the elder boards would be going to. And then I ran into the same thing as I did with education reform. And what would happen is that they would go to a conference or a seminar or a workshop, and a lot of times the word transforming would be included. And lots of times they would look for a vision, they'd go to additional retreats, and then in small groups they were mentored, and usually using the term spiritual formation. And that comes from Richard Foster and also Dallas Willard. It involves spiritual disciplines, and it's the use of contemplative spirituality. And that means that you are to get closer to God, and you use all these different disciplines.
Yeah, but of course, the contemplation really is sort of going to take you into a meditative or mystical sort of state. Isn't that really what it's all about? Is to change your whole attitude, and by the process of meditation, you open yourself up to demonic possession. And that's what happened to many of the ancient monks. This is what they were doing. Mysticism has nothing to do with the scriptures. This is the antithesis of the scriptures, because you're opening yourself to the other dimension.
Exactly. In fact, we're warned in God's word over and over again about such deception. And God comes to us through the gospel, and it's not like a secret type process. The Lord, His gospel, it can be understood by a four-year-old. And instead, they've added all these different practices and different steps and whatnot. And a lot of it, most of it, is actually from the occult. And the new term is called new spirituality. And then another term is called ancient future worship. And these are things that a lot of kids are learning in their youth group, because we found out that there was a group called Youth Specialties, and then when you research their website, you can go into their website and you find all kinds of this stuff. And what happens is that a lot of these pastors are just, I don't know, it just seems like as a people, we have not followed God's word, and we are getting farther and farther away from His true, true word. And that's where deception comes in. A lot of people, they don't realize they're deceived until they are told the truth. And we were appalled. We were just appalled. This total quality management process, Peter Drucker, Bob Buford. Another one would be Peter Senge, S-E-N-G-E. Leadership Network has been changed to Leader to Leader. It's all funded through, this is interesting, the Lilly Endowment, which Lilly is involved a lot with Prozac. Another big funder would be the Alban Institute, and I think you're familiar with them, and that goes back to some bad theft. There's different publishing companies, Josie Bass And then Zondervan, which has been purchased by Rupert Murdoch. They're really into the emergent type stuff. But terms used are like authenticity, vision casting, team building, missional, top-down standards. Then there's partners, and they hold people accountable. And their discipling programs that are introduced are not about discipling. They're more about getting your membership into line and making sure that they do as they're told. So on Barrett Chose's website, there's a really good chart that shows different terms, New Age terms in the church. And you can go to this and, like, for outcomes, the new term for an outcome is that it's a predetermined, an outcome that is predetermined, that which must be met behaviorally or attitudinally, and there is either an award or a sanction. It's sanctioned on performance, based on performance. There's other terms that tie in with the United Nations, and those are healthy families, healthy communities, healthy churches. But see, you have to come to the right attitudes to be healthy. And I don't know. The word disciple, it used to mean a pupil or a learner. The verb of disciple means to teach or train someone. And now it means a rigorous adherence to a pre-described program or a set of teachings in order to convert whole groups of people to the new spirituality.
And the average individual said, this couldn't be going on today because if it was going on, my minister would warn me. These things couldn't be going on because Rush Limbaugh would tell us, or Sean Hannity, or certainly the Fox people on Fox News, because we know they're conservative. There could not be this spiritual conspiracy that has involved our churches and our schools and our government and certainly organized medicine. These things couldn't be really going on, and yet the reality is they are going on, and the fact you've never heard of them out there in the listening audience simply is a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. Go right ahead, Michelle.
Well, Fox News is owned by Rupert Murdoch, and he has also ties to Rick Warren. All these connections just kind of interweave.
Right.
And now we have Tony Blair, and he has the New Faith Foundation. And daily, when you go to the news and whatnot, there seems to be more and more of a push towards this One World Church. That's where everyone's heading, and the One World Religion.
And Tony Blair is now the negotiator, the official negotiator of the Quartet. What is the Quartet? Why, it is a supranational organization made of the United States, Russia, the European Union, and the United Nations. Tony Blair, who was really cast aside by his own people because of betrayal of his promises to them, now is suddenly announced he's going to become convert to Catholicism. And why would that happen at this time in history? Why? Because there are powerful forces working in every one of our churches, but they're all aimed at one thing, the New World Order, the New World Religion. The New World Leader, and establishing that New World Leader with the person of the false prophet beside him. But really talking about the formation, establishment of the Antichrist, and it's just as there is a Holy Trinity with Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, so there is an unholy Trinity with Satan, the Antichrist, and the false prophet. And they're all working together towards the common goal of the world government. And yet most people have no idea what's going on today. Go right ahead.
Well, all of this is coming quite quickly, and I don't mean to sound negative about churches, and I do encourage people to go to church and be involved with church. I think that what has happened is that through this church growth, movement, pastors are they're tempted, okay, and they're tempted to build bigger churches and whatnot. But if they go to the source, of the program, what they're promoting, it's not good, and we're warned through Scripture to go to the root and find out if it's good or not. In Galatians, Paul told the Galatians, he said, "I am amazed that you are so quickly deserting him who called you by the grace of Christ for a different gospel, which is really not another. Only there are some who are disturbing you and want to distort the gospel of Christ. But even if we or an angel from heaven should preach to you a gospel contrary to what we have preached to you, he is to be accursed." And there's just warnings throughout God's word over and over again about deception. I just feel like we're in the final preparation to receive this New Age Christ, which would be the false Christ.
And it is not Jesus Christ, is it the Christ is the term they use, isn't that right?
Mm-hmm. They will use Christ, and sometimes they'll even use Jesus, but it's not the same.
I mean, until people understand there really are people out there who worship a different Christ, a different God, then none of this that's going on makes sense. But it's really a throwback to the ancient Gnostic beliefs that there are two gods, the true God, and then the God that the Christians worship, the God who created the heavens and the earth. And this heresy has been around for 5,000 years. But, of course, it's being actually being pushed today by Oprah Winfrey and by Larry King and by Rhonda Burns and the people who talk about the secret, and millions of people are being indoctrinated in this, even many of our Christians. They've changed the music of the church. And, of course, they brought Satan's music into our churches. And the average Christian thinks there can't be anything wrong with it, because, after all the churches are doing it. Well, that's the problem. So many of the churches are. It's so hard to find a church that still has an organ where you sing the old hymns and where you're really worshiping the God of the Bible and not the new God that is replacing the God of the Bible. But go right ahead.
Well, the old hymns have so much truth in them. And I think that when people sing the old hymns, they're just they're reminded so much of how much we have lost our traditional upbringing and whatnot. And when you sing these, I call them like 7-11 songs, where you sing 7 verses 11 times or whatever, and it's just more like a mantra.
Well, that's what it is, really, Michelle, because it's aimed at opening up your mind to demonic possession. And they're doing that at the churches today. This is how you hypnotize people. This is how you open them up to this mystical experience.
Mm-hmm. Our kids, they don't even know the new hymns, and they'll say that they don't, that they won't like the hymns, but that's not true. That's not true.
They have eternal truth in there, and that's why they cannot be allowed in our churches today. Oh, they may have one or two older hymns for for those older people, but most of this, as you say, the 7-11 songs, but it has a psychological impact. They know what they're doing. They just don't want the Christians to know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. You know, Brian McLaren, he's kind of like a leader in the emergent church, and he's going to be speaking at the World Future Society annual conference this July, the 26th through the 28th in Washington, D.C. And there's quite a few different, just different people that are just involved too much with all this New Age stuff that's so connected.
Well, of course, we find Brian McLaren of the World Future Society, which is a subdivision of the Council on Foreign Relations that Rick Warren belongs to. And, of course, this is why Rick is, of course, able to go all throughout the world. He's become one of the internationalists who's dedicated not to this preservation of our society, but to this one world government, not to the continuation of Christianity, but to the new religion, the religion of Peter Drucker and the transformational Marxists.
Mm-hmm. You know, Rick Warren, he said, this was a quote from September 5th, 205 at a prayer breakfast, and he said, "You may be Catholic or Protestant or Buddhist or Baptist or Muslim or Mormon or Jewish, or you may have no religion at all. I'm not interested in your religious background, because God did not create the universe for us to have religion. He came for us to have a relationship with Him." And he also said, "I have known many people who believe in the Messiah of Jesus, regardless of what religion they are, because they believe in Him, and it's about a relationship, not a religion. You've heard this many times." But you know, when you look into the push by Rick Warren, it's not the relationship with Jesus Christ, Lord and Savior. If you just keep digging and digging, you will understand how off he is getting people on the wrong road, and what a sad situation this is. His various statements, they render into one world religion. And he's doing his peace program. The let me say these different peace global peace plan. Sorry, here we go.
Well, I'm afraid we're not going to get to the global peace plan, but we'll have to get you back again, Aaron. And both you and Mitchell, you do a great job of bringing this out very, very clearly for our listeners. Our guests this evening have been Mitchell and Michelle Wright, right here at Radio Liberty. Hang on there, Michelle. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Michelle, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. So what message would you and Mitchell like to leave with our listeners?
Well, I would encourage people to grab their Bibles and be in God's Word. And through His Word, we are told the truth. And in Luke 21:36, it says, "Watch therefore and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things that will come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man."
Amen to that. Well, I certainly believe that behind everything going on are powerful spiritual forces. I believe that God foresaw this thousands of years ago. And we read, of course, Paul's second letter to the Thessalonians, where he tells us that before the man of sin is revealed, there will be a great falling away of the church. And, you know, nobody ever talks about that. Oh, once saved, always saved, nothing to worry about. But we are told in the Holy Scriptures that there will be this great falling away, and I believe we are witnessing it that today. How fortunate we are to be, you and Mitchell and the small cadre who are listening to our programs and listen to similar programs and following the writings of Barrett Schoss and our good friend John Leffler. And in fact, all of the people, of course, you mentioned are people that we look to for information and for inspiration, and certainly Lighthouse Trails organization, which you're aligned with, is doing a great, great job.
Well, I'm just thankful that the Lord woke us up, and I think that we were being lazy, and we weren't searching God's Word and comparing what we were being told with His Word. And so I'm thankful for what happened to us, even though it was uncomfortable and whatnot. I just thank the Lord every day.
Well, I think that we all have a great deal to be thankful for, because we're all in the process of learning, but of course our job is to reach people in the United States here, because America is the key to everything that's going on today. Can we turn around what's going on? I don't know. I think we have to try to reach people one at a time, to make them understand what is happening, and hopefully, of course, these people who are meeting and either bringing to Christianity or bringing back to the true Christian message will be with us one day in heaven.
Well, you know, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, and that's from Romans 3:23. And we just pray for people that if they've fallen under this deception, that they will wake up too.
Well, it's all we can do. Well, thank Mitchell very much for being with us, and I really would like to get you on again to our morning program, and perhaps even again on an evening program, because both of you have such a tremendous grasp of what's going on, and we just need more people on the front line such as you, bringing people to an acknowledgement and understanding of the satanic forces we face. Good night, and God bless you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Steele.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope you enjoyed our program this evening with Mitchell and Michelle Wright. And if you'd like to get a copy of the program, CD or audio tape, remember, we do talk during the breaks. The information is so important. We have a 4-tape set on the Church Growth Movement. We recommend it. We have a DVD called Diaprax. It's a talk that's given by a friend of ours, Dr. Robert Klink, as he goes into the background of how this movement was designed. It's basically a sales program, and of course you've been sold a bill of goods. That's what it's about. So the 4-tape set on the Church Grove movement, the DVD on Diaprax, and then we carry a number of books from Lighthouse Trails, certainly books by Ray Youngen and by other gentleman who writes. You can simply give us a call and ask for a list of those books, which we don't have right with us, but certainly the literature that we have will give you a tremendous insight into what's going on today. And of course, this really is, it's amazing as we see this unfolding before our very eyes, and most people have no idea at all of what is taking place. So if you'd like more information, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. I would ask for the books we carry by Ray Youngen, Y-U-N-G-E-N, and then of course we have other books by authors who are very, very well informed on this subject. We have information from Barrett Schoss, and we carry a number of her books as well. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you will certainly go to our website of RadioLiberty.com, look at the information we have posted there from a spiritual point of view. But remember, behind everything going on today are powerful spiritual forces. How do we understand them? We have a four-tape set of my interviews with Constance Cumby. We talk about the emergence of the world leader, who's coming and coming very soon. We have a DVD with Constance Cumby called The Emergence. That's The Emergence. And then, of course, we have my talk is given by Chris Pinto. Chris Pinto had actually put together several wonderful DVDs we carry, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, The Riddles in Stone, and then, of course, his DVDs on the Millennium. Basically, you really want to get that information and have it at your fingertips. But we have a DVD talk that Chris Pinto gave called The Atlantis Connection. It's available only from Radio Liberty. And, of course, what people must understand is that to the occultist, America was to become the new Atlantis. Why are we still fighting in Iraq today, over five years after we attacked Iraq? Why are we still fighting over there? Why are we fighting in Afghanistan after 7 years? Well, it all has to do with America leading the world and bringing about this one world government. We are to become the new Atlantis, as the lost Atlantis of old, that horrible and corrupt society, which, if it ever did exist, was the society that was destroyed by the Great Flood, because, of course, the traditional story of Atlantis is it was destroyed by a Great Flood because it was so evil and corrupt. But there are people who want to bring it back again, who want to, of course, to reestablish lost Atlantis. And, of course, Francis Bacon, who was a leader of one of the secret societies, the Rosicrucians, wrote a book in the early 1600s called The New Atlantis. America is to be the New Atlantis. And Chris Pinto's talk is called The Atlantis Connection. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. If you haven't seen his DVDs, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings, or Riddles in Stone, you need to get those. Warren Smith wrote a number of books. That's Warren Smith. And we carry his books. You could just call, and the girls will look those up for you. We recommend them. He goes into this whole New Age movement as well. Very important information for times such as this. And you need to understand what's going on, and then you need to begin to educate others, because, of course, an awful lot of people are going to spend eternity in hell because they really have never truly embraced the true principles of the scriptures. Well, our telephone number is, of course, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and of course, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Charlie Peters. And Charlie was to be called an automotive activist. He was very much involved in many things having to do with automobile emissions, and certainly the MTB fiasco where the legislators in Washington, D.C., in response to tremendous lobbying and a lot of money that passed hands, of course, brought MTB into our gasoline. Of course, it was put out there in the name of cleaning up air pollution, and not only polluted the air, polluted the water too, and it resulted in hundreds of million dollars worth of lawsuits and massive billion-dollar settlements. And a fiasco, somebody once said, there's no problem facing America today that a new series of federal laws won't make worse. Well, now we have another wonderful law. We have ethanol being mandated. Ethanol is going to solve the problem of energy dependence. And so a third of our corn crop is being used to produce ethanol, the most expensive form of alternative fuel. I have nothing against alcohol. I mean, the farmers have been trying to use alcohol as a fuel for their tractors and other things for many years, but always, of course, they were blocked by the oil companies from doing that. And now we've taken one of the most significant means of food used here in the United States, and 60% of all the corn that crosses international boundaries to be used as a staple in other countries is produced here in the United States, and we've taken a third of it, and we're wasting it on producing ethanol. We have to subsidize every single gallon of that, you know, and it costs more, takes more energy to produce a gallon of ethanol than a gallon of gasoline will produce. But I have nothing against the alcohol, but the ethanol is a terrible idea. Corn-based ethanol should never have been legislated. But as we said, there's no problem facing America today that a new government program won't make worse, because it's going to enrich some people like Arthur Daniels Midland, and it's going to have a tremendous impact, creating famine throughout the world here in the next couple of years. And then, of course, they'll find out it was a mistake, and oh, shucks, we had no idea what we were doing. Well, Charlie, tell us your view on what's going on.
Hello, Doctor.
Always good to have you with us.
I think what makes this circumstances that virtually everybody is aware of, the media is involved, Congress is involved, the World Trade Organization is involved, the United Nations is involved, with questions about the impact on food availability worldwide being generated by creating biofuels, using food for energy to run your car.
Well, of course, the thing is that, you know, in Brazil, where they have everything, you know, I think 85% of their cars or 85% of their fuel down there is alcohol, 15% gasoline, but they don't make it out of corn, something we need to eat. They make it out of sugar, or their sugar beets, or there are other means of making it. But surely corn's the most expensive way to make it, so why in heaven's name are we doing it? And taking the possibility that there could be mass world starvation because of policies here in America.
Well, first of all, I believe that you got to really define who the primary benefactor is.
Well, that's how we'll be back in a moment. Hold on, I'll be right back with Charlie. Go right ahead, Charlie.
We've heard talk for a long time about the hydrogen economy.
Right.
And in my humble opinion, the hydrogen economy infrastructure is designed to be ethanol and methanol as a carrier for the hydrogen in order to fuel energy and transportation. So this is an infrastructure for a future market that very significant business interests are interested in going to, the hydrogen economy. So if you use ethanol, you run it through a reformer in the car, as an example, to extract the hydrogen, and then you use that in the fuel cell, you have a hydrogen car that's actually motivated by ethanol or methanol.
All right, fine.
I'm of the impression that the hydrogen economy infrastructure is designed to be ethanol and methanol, and so the corn ethanol currently going in the gasoline is creating the infrastructure for that future market, which is designed along with the business interest of creating fear in the public that we're frying the earth, the global warming is going to destroy us, that it's going to cause huge havoc on the possibility of man even surviving, as a business strategy to get an okay to create a trillions of dollars of carbon credits to fund the transition to the hydrogen economy, where they intend to make cars in China with currently half of the carbon credits, which is about half of the carbon credits in the world, are going to the Chinese government as payoff for access to basically slave labor in China to confiscate that market and in turn confiscate our market. So in my view, what we're doing here is we're on a transition to a very different kind of marketplace, which is basically about monopoly partnerships between government and multinational corporate interests.
All right, fine. Well, do they have the technology yet to develop the... Do they have the technology yet, Charlie, to develop the...
What is happening right now is, as we've been progressing down this trail of creating this infrastructure for the new economy, that the... What has happened is that this has created a shortfall in the availability of corn with the huge amounts of flooding that we've had in
Charlie, you have to hold that thought now. We brought our listeners back on board, and Charlie is saying that he feels that what is behind this effort to use ethanol, and why they're going to insist on making the alcohol out of corn rather than making it out of sugar beets or sugar, or simply importing it from South America. Brazil can actually export the billions of gallons of gasoline up here, you know, or billions of gallons of ethanol or alcohol to us, far cheaper than we could actually produce it here. But it's a boondoggle that's double the cost of corn. So basically, Charlie feels that this is a prelude to a hydrogen-based form of fuel. And basically, do they really have the technology to actually create this carbon, this hydrogen-based technology in cars?
Well, let me respond to you on the hydrogen economy this way. We're indicating to the public that we're going to put a bottle in a car, and we're going to pressurize this bottle with hydrogen, and we're going to use that to fuel the car, the fuel cell car. The bottles are proposed to have a pressure of 5 to 10,000 pounds of hydrogen pressure. It is necessary to go to very high pressures because hydrogen is very light. It doesn't compress very well. So you have to have an awful lot of pressure to have any kind of BTUs of energy in that bottle. I used to be in the business of working in aerospace, making solid rocket propellant. We had rockets that had a 2,500-pound chamber pressure that had a 6/10 of a second burn rate from the time you lit the match until it was through burning that would go completely out of sight in the air before they quit burning. What makes a rocket go from point A to point B is the difference in pressure between one end of the rocket and the other, and the chamber pressure on those rockets was 2,500 pounds. So we're going to put a 1,000-pound pressurized hydrogen bottle in your car. What happens when that car gets into an accident that's of sufficient severity where it breaks the bottle loose, it punches a hole in it? What will that bottle do? Wow. So there is no possibility that the what is being told to the public, that we're going to put all this hydrogen as a gas in a bottle and use that to run all the cars on the road, is absolutely ludicrous. In the second place, using hydrogen, if you're going to make it at point A and you're going to transport it, you're going to put it in the car in a bottle, current best practices, you are losing, you're only getting something like 40% of the hydrogen that you generate in a big plant to the car and even available for use, because you're losing it, because hydrogen is like Houdini. It doesn't matter where you put it, it gets out. So in any pipeline, any hose, anything that you run it through, it tends to escape. So trying to get any kind of ability to transfer from point A to point B and create an infrastructure for delivery of gaseous hydrogen is a joke. It doesn't work.
Well, of course, what about these hydrogen cars that they do have at the present time that apparently do work pretty well?
Of the ethanol being generated in Brazil, a lot of the information that you indicated isn't exactly correct.
All right, and why isn't that correct?
The amount of ethanol being used in Brazil is somewhere around 40% of the liquid fuels being delivered there. Of the gasoline that's delivered, approximately 25% of the gasoline is ethanol. So the gasoline that's delivered to the car, 25% of that gasoline is ethanol.
Well, it's not
the
gasoline.
It's
a mixture.
Ethanol is 100% ethanol.
Mm-hmm.
Here we use 85% gasoline, 15% ethanol. In Brazil, it's 100% ethanol. What has made the difference in Brazil is that they have found huge resources of oil that are adding to their market. And the truth is that a majority of the population is still using gasoline laced with ethanol, rather than the pure ethanol. And so the example of what's happening in Brazil as being what we can do, we can't use any of their products that they're currently making there. And the numbers that we're being provided create an illusion that the majority of the fuel being used in Brazil is ethanol, which is not correct, and that they've become self-sustainable. And the reason that they are now self-sustaining themselves is because of oil being found off of the east coast of Brazil,
but Charlie, that isn't
limiting their market.
But Charlie, that hasn't even come into production yet. Right now, of course, in Brazil, where of course they have a fuel, it's predominantly ethanol or alcohol, and then laced with gasoline. Is that correct or not?
I don't think so.
All right, fine. Well, I do, but
actually, the majority of the cars in Brazil are currently using the gasoline option rather than the ethanol option, of which is approximately 25% ethanol.
All right, fine. Well, Chris, the thing is that you
wait a minute,
Charlie, you said just
the ethanol is cheap enough where it makes sense to use the ethanol, but I think a significant percentage of the population is still using the gasoline ethanol combination.
Oh, well, I think that all of it down there is a gasoline ethanol.
I'm under the impression that, in fact, we are importing oil from Brazil at this juncture.
No, Brazil had just found within the last few, last month or so, there's a massive pool of oil down there.
All of the policies, the government policies that affect ethanol, all of them, in my opinion, significantly increase the use of oil and increase the profit of oil.
All right, fine.
As an example, we make cars that are capable of running on ethanol or E85 or gasoline. Each and every car that the car manufacturer produces that is capable of running on either fuel, they get credits in their average miles per gallon. So the fleet of cars being delivered in the marketplace are able to use more fuel because of the credits, because they're producing cars capable of using ethanol.
Well, of course, Charlie, you have to stop once in a while because, of course, we can't carry on a conversation if you just talk over me.
Yes, sir.
All right, fine. Of course, what do you think about the use of alcohol as a substitute for a gasoline here in the United States, number one? Number two, what about using corn to produce the alcohol? If we're going to produce the alcohol, shouldn't we produce it from something else that would be easier, cheaper, and would not have driven up the price of the corn?
There are many experts who are quite well convinced that the amount of energy that goes into the creation of corn ethanol or switchgrass or any of the ethanol being produced for use in a car takes more fossil fuel energy than the ethanol is able to provide.
But of course, you don't have to generate electricity by the use of fossil fuels. If we had nuclear energy, we would have all the electricity we wanted.
To increase the profit and the use of fossil fuels, and it is primarily a benefit for the oil companies. They're the ones who make the fertilizer. They're the ones who make the pesticides. They're the ones who are driving this market. And they're the ones who are benefiting financially from the use of ethanol. And they're the long-term benefactors, the long-term strategies in the hydrogen economy that I believe they're supporting and that want the partnerships with government generated from the collection of carbon credits.
Well, of course, this whole thing on carbon credits is the greatest scam of the world because, of course, what it does is allow people to continue polluting. All they have to do is buy a carbon credit. You're going to buy a carbon credit from communist China, the largest polluter in the world. Certainly, this has nothing to do with pollution because certainly the Kyoto Protocol doesn't influence China. The air there is so impure that they had actually to shut down many of the factories adjacent to Beijing so that the air would not be contaminated during the Olympics. Coming. So this is basically, I mean, if you're really concerned about pollution, if this is really true, why do you have to buy carbon credits and why is Al Gore in that business of selling carbon credits? He benefits any time anybody buys one. And what this does is not decrease the pollution. It allows you to continue polluting as much as you were before. This is a scam.
Well, the carbon credits, which is technically collected from the general population, are traded and go over half of that market. Those credits go to China, or the money that people who use fossil fuels are contributing goes to China. And half of the money that goes to China goes to the Chinese government as a tax that they collect to fund the corporate efforts there to confiscate that market.
All right, so why are we doing everything we can to build up communist China, the most brutal anti-Christian regime in the world?
Well, I think it has to do with just the old greed of wanting to confiscate markets and make money and be the only game in town, and that some people think that that's to their advantage. Anytime you create a monopoly, in fact, you destroy incentives and you destroy profit and you create a very, very ugly marketplace that is not profitable.
All right, fine. Well, we'll be back in just a moment with Charlie Peters. But the thing is, of course, that the United States is building up communist China, its military and industrial potential. I just like, of course, we built up Adolf Hitler prior to World War II. Could it possibly be we're creating the best enemy money can buy? All right, Charlie Peter, go right ahead. Go ahead, Charlie. Charlie, are you there? Well, I think we've lost Charlie. I'll ask my producer to get Charlie Peters back on the line. Jeannie, would you mind calling Charlie Peters? We somehow seem to have lost him. But Certainly the question comes up is ethanol an effective means of solving the energy crisis? And I would like to suggest it's not. There's nothing wrong with alcohol as an alternative fuel, but it's got to be able to be produced much more cheaply and much more economically. Every gallon of ethanol that's produced has to be subsidized by the government because it is not an effective means of fuel production. Jeannie, I'm going to ask my producer to go ahead and get Charlie Peters back on the line at the present time so we can go ahead and continue our discussion with him. But certainly somebody had called in and talking about the Cummins engine company is going to make a common rail diesel combined with the hydrogen cell that'll get 100 miles an hour. They've tried to sell this to Ford and to a General Motors, and they're not about to hear about this at all. So I think there are alternatives out there. But remember, the oil companies don't want a solution to the problem. They want the problem because they're making a fabulous sum of money, and they're effectively blocking the development of oil, certainly off of the North Slope of Alaska. Do you think for 1 minute if the oil companies really wanted to drill in Anwar or off to the east and west coast of this country, that they couldn't buy enough politicians? Well, of course, they're not doing it, so we have to ask ourselves why. I'm going to ask Jeannie to get Charlie Peters back on the line. We've lost our guest, so I don't want to have a monologue the rest of this hour. Let's just see, is that Charlie? Hello, is this Charlie? No, it's not. So anyway, please, Jeannie, if you wouldn't mind trying to get Charlie back on the line. I would like to hear what he has to say. But under any circumstances, we do hope that many of you out there will want to get the information on this subject. First of all, you really need to get our four tapes out on the oil deception. There is no shortage of oil in the world. The oil companies want to create this artificial shortage because, of course, they can run the price up to $5 a gallon of gasoline, $10 a gallon of gasoline. And, of course, we're going to be looking to the destruction of the infrastructure of our society. Not only that, but, of course, the use of ethanol as a means of fuel is going to create a tremendous shortage of food. And why at this specific time in history, when of course we're facing the very real possibility of losing half of our corn crop, would we be using a third of our corn to produce ethanol as an alternative fuel? Just doesn't make sense. In fact, there's so many things out there that really don't make sense today. Well, our telephone number is, of course, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you're out there in the listening audience, want to call in until such time as Charlie Peters gets back on the line, or of course, we can come up with somebody calling in on these subjects, because we don't have anything really prepared for the program this evening. But I can tell you that the reason that they are running the price of oil up in this country, we've always had much cheaper gasoline than they have in Europe, but there really are people who have a different world view. They really want to lower the living standards here in America, and they know, of course, if they get the price of gasoline up high enough, it will change our way of life. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've got Bill calling from Florida while we're waiting to get Charlie Peters back. And, Bill, do you have a quick question? We've got our guest on another line. Go ahead.
I heard on the news here a couple weeks ago that it's on one of the nightly news programs that it said all of the gasoline companies in Florida will have to have 10% ethanol in their gasoline, and they also said that is the reason why people are seeing a drop in their gas mileage. I wondered if that was true or not.
I suspect it probably is. I don't think that ethanol or alcohol is as good a fuel as gasoline, but it certainly is a fuel and it does work.
It's very expensive, though.
It sure is, and it really it's just a scam. And if you're going to produce alcohol, you don't make it out of corn. That's for sure.
Right, that's just driving the price of everything else, huh?
Right, and then, of course, that drives up the price of chickens and of chickens, of eggs and of dairy products, and they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know.
That's true.
Hey, thanks very much for calling, Bill. We've got Charlie again on line two.
Thank you.
Hi, Charlie. Do you have a question or comment?
I'll
go right ahead, Charlie. We somehow we got you on the wrong line. Charlie, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Go right ahead.
Well, what was happening was that when you were talking, it wasn't coming through on my cell, so I've now called you on a landline, and hopefully I can respond to your comments a little better. I apologize.
All right, fine. Go right ahead. Of course, you have to be on a hard line because you don't get good transmission.
Is this sound a little better, Doctor?
It's ever so much better. Go right ahead.
Anyway, we were talking about Brazil and how that impacts the market. We were talking about pollution credits or carbon credits and how that works. And I said to you that somewhere between 40% and 70%, depending on what information you look at, of the carbon credits currently being traded are going to China. And this information comes from the university on the peninsula. Stanford University is providing the information that of the carbon credits, they're going to China, and they're primarily being, one of the things they're being used for is to mitigate CFC production in China. And the gentleman who is in charge of that issue at Stanford indicated that that system was a fraud, and he has indicated that half of those credits, or the money, which comes from is collected from the public technically for carbon credits, is going to China, and that the half of that was going to the Chinese government as a tax, and then the remaining portion was going for the, a significant portion of it was going to mitigate CFCs, which is a much larger than the total amount of money they're using to create the CFCs. They're getting paid for mitigating the CFCs going into the air.
Well, Charlie, it sounds to me like this is just another means by which we are financing the most ruthless and brutal regime in the world today, as we always have, once again producing the best enemy money can buy. Because, of course, China is the greatest polluter in the world today, far more of a polluter than the United States. Certainly, why should we be giving them, paying them for carbon credits? They're not cutting back on their production of pollution. They're increasing the world pollution. It's simply a means of wealth transfer, don't you think?
I think it's about markets and business, and it's about confiscation of their market as well as our market by multinational corporate interests who want to confiscate all the business and all the jobs and all the products. We currently see a huge amount of products from China. With this, as this continues forward, we're going to see that expand to a much larger amount than it currently is.
But I think we have to add that, and our listeners should ask themselves, why are our leaders doing this? Are they stupid? No. It is that they have no loyalty to America. This is part of this whole internationalist goal of building up the economy of communist China and communist Vietnam and communist Russia and the communist countries throughout Africa. As we transfer America's wealth and the wealth of the American people to these other countries, would you agree or disagree with that?
I think it's about business interests being fed offshore, which is confiscating our jobs and our business and our future and completely raping us. The price of a dollar is going down like a lead sinker, and we are currently, I believe, in serious trouble. The price of oil is, if you compare it to the value of gold or silver, whatever, what is falling is the price of the dollar, which is resulting in a huge increase in the price of oil, and the people that are paying is us.
Amen to that. Of course, that's why they call it black oil, because, of course, it does bring tremendous prosperity. And when the price of oil, you know, they can get it out of the ground for, you know, $4 or $5 a barrel, and it's going for pretty close to $140 a barrel now on the open market. Something's wrong with this picture, ladies and gentlemen. Black gold, well, it's becoming a substitute for gold. It's something we all have to have, and it's in very short, artificially short supply. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, our guest this evening is Charlie Peters. And here, this is a brief time. Let's go ahead and talk to Dan, who's calling from California. Dan, you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I was you know, they're talking about energy and everything.
Oh, is this June? I'm sorry, June. We're not going to get off on the solar energy subject this evening. I'd love to talk to you on that, some other subject, but that's really an alternative to what we're talking about, which is ethanol and fuel for our regular automobile engine. Let's go to Dan calling from California. Dan, are you there?
Sure. I'm here, Dr. Stan.
Good. You have a question or comment for our guest?
Well, I guess my comment or question would be, we keep referring to oil as a fossil fuel, and I don't believe it is so. In my research, I know we were taught that in school, that oil comes from dead dinosaurs and plants and organic matter, but the science and the evidence seems to contradict that, and I could burn the bones of my dead cat, and they won't burn. So fossil fuel, I think, is we all fall into that trap of keep saying the claptrap fossil fuel.
Okay.
I don't believe, you know, we need to stop saying that.
All right. I think you're absolutely right. I think that if you read the work of Thomas Gould, the astrophysicist, I think he was at Princeton, he has come up with an alternative theory, and I think you're absolutely right. But that really is not on the subject we're talking about. But anything else you want to say, Dan, before we let you go?
Well, I noticed that there was a news down here in Southern California about they're rolling out these three hydrogen stations in Honda and Torrance. 2,000 people are signed up to try to lease a car for $600 a month that'll go, 150 miles. No, actually, it was 270 miles. But that's because they only made the hydrogen tank, a gallon and a half equivalent in compressed hydrogen. I think that the technologies are there, but they just want to see, kind of bait everybody with the prospect while we're all paying $7-$8 a gallon for gas.
All right, fine.
My own work in transportation, I'm making about 30% of what I made 6 months ago, and it's hard to even pay the bills anymore.
Now, what sort of work do you do, Dan?
I'm a taxi driver.
Okay, fine. So you're being hit very heavily by this.
I'm being hit very heavily, but it's not as bad. It's actually worse for the independent truckers that can't even afford to drive their trucks.
All right, fine. Well, thanks.
Not all of them, but a lot of them.
Okay,
and,
fine. Thanks very much.
That's the truth.
What's Charlie there?
Yes, sir.
You have any comment at all for Dan?
Absolutely. Like I said, the hydrogen economy is the agenda here, and that's the reason why they're creating ethanol and methanol. The methanol was the basis for the MTBE, ethanol coming from corn.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Dan on the line calling from Southern California, a taxi driver, saying that the rise in the price of gasoline has taken about two-thirds of his income, and he's having a hard time making it. Charlie was commenting on the hydrogen economy, the idea we're going to shift over to a hydrogen economy. Go ahead and pick that story up, Charlie.
Well, if you use hydrogen, you run it through a catalytic reformer to pull out the hydrogen, and you use that in the fuel cell. And the cost to manufacture the cars that the taxi driver was talking about is extremely expensive, somewhere in the neighborhood of $500,000 a piece or plus. And so those are really not economically feasible to put in the marketplace at all at this juncture. And so that, like he said, is saying, wow, here we got it, here we go. Until you get the carbon credits to fund this transition, it doesn't make sense.
And where do you get the carbon credits from?
You get the carbon credits, AB 32, Mary Nichols, and what they're doing this week by creating a tax to solve the global warming problem is exactly the basis for funding worldwide with trillions of dollars carbon credits collected on the use of fossil fuels. And I agree with what he said, that oil primarily comes out of the earth, comes out of the core of the earth, not from fossils, and that it is a rejuvenating resource. I believe that is true. I believe there's no shortage of availability of energy. So what he is talking about is to justify the current price of gasoline, which is the oil companies demonizing themselves to justify to the public to collect the carbon tax to fund their new program of partnership with government that eliminates the competitive marketplace and keeps their profits up on a permanent basis while confiscating business.
All right, fine. Anything else, Dan, before we let you go?
Okay, well, my final question or comment would be, you know, if there's an abundance of oil and gas, that the state itself should maybe possibly set kind of a, you know, get into the oil business of like, you know, when we started this country, we had a post office to secure communications. Well, if they would have been driving cars back then, they might have set up the gas station next to the post office.
Dan,
and that would just be my final comment. Maybe I'll get off the line.
Dan, but there's no problem facing America today that government won't make worse. The only thing government does very well, is, of course, is kill people. They have, of course, the army is very, very efficient. But the rest of government is a total catastrophe. And we've seen what they did with the MTBE. We see what they're doing with the drugs that, of course, they're releasing. The Federal Drug Administration is releasing that they know will kill people. And then, of course, the drugs which are beneficial, which treat cancer and others, they're keeping off the market. I'm afraid, Dan, that there's no problem facing America today, that a new government program won't make worse. If we have a problem, it's got to be solved by free enterprise, by getting government out. And, of course, the reason we have an oil monopoly is because government has given them a monopoly. Why do we have an oil monopoly? Because the oil companies funded the environmental movement to destroy their competition. They've sure done a good job of it. Okay, Charlie, pick the story up there.
Well, I have a suggestion as to how to solve this problem, and that is we have two things going on right now. We have a significant budget shortfall in Sacramento, and we have what I perceive to be a huge escalation of oil prices, gasoline prices, food prices, water prices generated by this corn ethanol process. I suggest that if there was a fee or a tax put on the use of corn ethanol in the gasoline, and that should be a significant price, and that money can go help balance the budget in the short term, and that will generate huge support from the oil companies to get relief from the requirement for using corn ethanol in the gasoline, which will result in a waiver that the governor of Texas has requested, 24 federal senators have requested. There has been huge efforts on an international basis to cut back on the corn ethanol because of its impact on the food on an international basis. So put a tax on the use of corn ethanol in our gasoline will generate the lobbying efforts of the oil companies, because all of this money to balance the budget will come right straight out of the oil company's pocket. They'll go to work and lobby to remove the necessity for using corn ethanol, and the price of gasoline, in my opinion, will drop like a rock. It'll go down 50 cents in 30 days and another dollar by Christmas.
Charlie, who's going to pay the tax? If you put a tax,
oil companies.
How are you going to get the oil companies to pay it? Who buys the gasoline with the ethanol in it?
Okay, so the gasoline is put in tanker trucks at the rack. The ethanol is added to that tanker just before it goes to the service station. So right there is where you charge the tax or the fee on the use of corn ethanol. And that, since the oil companies say this is a market-based price, that the amount of money that they get charged for adding the ethanol will come straight out of their bottom line or their profit.
Yeah,
it won't affect the consumer, but it will instantly put them to work to get rid of this mandate.
Charlie, every time you put a tax on, we end up paying it. I've seen time and again when they've said, oh, my goodness, look, we've got those rich people, and they're getting all this money, and they're not paying taxes on. Let's put the alternative minimum tax on that. You know what happened? Why, we ended up paying the alternative minimum tax rather than the rich people out there. And every time they have a Income Tax Simplification Act, why, it gets more complicated. And any taxes you put on will be on indefinitely. And believe me, of course, if there's a tax added, we are going to end up paying it, not the oil companies. You're not going to get any place by, you know, taxing the oil by having something of that sort. I think that is a terrible idea, but you and I will disagree on that. I think the solution, of course, is to allow widespread drilling, which is the last thing the oil companies want. I think the real solution is to put a floor on the price of oil so that the independent independent oil drillers can go out there and can be sure that they get at least $25 a barrel, $25 a barrel for oil. And they've said, you give us a floor on oil, we'll start drilling again. They're not going to do it again unless there is a floor there, because it's happened in the past that great oil companies have simply dropped the price and destroyed the wildcatters. So we have a different alternative. I think that there's plenty of oil out there. I think it's readily available. It is the government, the environmentalists, and yes, the oil companies are doing everything they can to block competition. They're benefiting. They're making a tremendous amount of money on this. And the solution is not to get more government programs, but to bring the free enterprise system together. But how would you respond to that, Charlie?
Well, I don't argue with you. In fact, Doctor, what has to happen is there needs to be enough discussion of this issue to where Mr. Arnold Schwarzenegger has no choice but to remove the corn ethanol from our gasoline.
I'm all in favor of that.
And that's what this discussion is supposed to generate, is, hello, we want some relief, and we believe that the price of food and the price of gasoline and that what is going on with the oil companies is not appropriate, and we want relief, and we want it now. And I believe that Arnold will have no choice but to get out of the way and demand that it's removed. The mandate and subsidies for corn ethanol are removed.
That I would agree with you totally. I think that, of course, we never should have done it in the first place, and we can thank the federal government for doing that. We can thank Bob Dole for doing that, because, of course, he was the one who pushed this through the Senate. And this whole thing on corn ethanol, and why? Because Arthur Daniel Midlands gave a lot of money to his Bob Dole Foundation, and I call that bribery, but nobody's ever going to send Bob Dole to jail for taking money, yeah, are they?
Well, he and Mr. Dole are both helping Mr. Obama, who has been very supportive of corn ethanol, but who is now starting to consider the possibility of moving away from it because of the food issues worldwide that it's generating. So the truth is, as this issue is being discussed, it's starting to make a difference, and we're moving policy significantly internationally, and enough of this support goes to Arnold, he'll have no choice but to act.
Well, I think that what we need to do is bring out the fact, Charlie, that if the crop, the corn crop from the Middle West is as poor this year as anticipated because of the flooding back there,
right,
millions of people throughout the world are going to starve to death, and of course they're not going to be able to afford the price of oil. Those people who make a dollar a day and live on a dollar a day, and there's about a billion people who live on a dollar a day, another billion people live on $2 a day, and of course there's the price of their staple food, which is corn, doubles in value. They're going to starve to death, and I think we ought to let everybody know that Arnold and the politicians are responsible for this, and of course Bob Dole is going to have to take that to him, that fact with him when he stands before the pearly gates, and he's get to that age, and he's going to have to explain why he betrayed the people of this world for Arthur Daniels Midlands and of course all the goodies that they've given him. They get a subsidy on every gallon of ethanol that's produced, or almost every gallon of ethanol that's produced in the United States, at least on the majority of all the ethanol, why Arthur Daniel Midland makes out. And we have to actually subsidize the production of ethanol with, I don't know, 50 or 60 cent a gallon surtax that, of course, comes from the American taxpayer. Why are we subsidizing the production of alcohol? If it's not efficient, why are we going ahead and subsidizing it?
Well, the governor, Mr. Arnold Schwarzenegger, has called an emergency on our lack of availability of water in California. Last year, we doubled the production of corn for corn ethanol in California, which has a huge impact. It takes somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,700 gallons of water to grow enough corn to make 1 gallon of ethanol. So we have extracted huge amounts of water from our water tables and our water supply to grow corn, which we doubled the capacity of corn growth in California last year, which is impacting our waterways, which is impacting the availability of water, and to the point where we have actually called a statewide emergency on water. And so the corn ethanol removed from our market will significantly take help with the issue of the water crisis that we are currently experiencing.
I think there's a very, very, very well worthwhile point, and I would emphasize that I agree with you. There really is a problem here in America because, of course, because of the shortages of water in some areas and the flooding in other areas. We always have to ask ourselves, why is this occurring at this time in history, associated with the possibility of looming famine throughout the world? Why at this time in history do we suddenly see this dramatic change in weather? And I don't believe it has anything to do with global warming. I think that's the greatest scam in the world.
Well, when you create the huge usage of water by growing the corn for the corn ethanol right here in California, and now we have a water emergency, you're creating the problem to create additional taxation on the public to benefit the folks with the money. I'm sorry, that's not good policy.
All right, fine. Let's go to Jim, who's calling in from Aptos. Hang on there. Let's go to Jim and see if he has any comments. Jim, are you there? Do you have any question or comment for our guest?
A couple of quick things. I've been checking out the Common Rail diesel system. Volkswagen has it, and Mercedes and several European people.
Now, the Common Rail, this is a specific type of a diesel engine, right?
Right, it's where the it's under tremendous pressure, and the fuel is available to be squirted into any cylinder they want to, so there's not a lot of moving and twisting things to get it done. It's just sitting there ready to be opened.
Right.
The biggest advantage to it is extreme efficiency. A two-ton car gets about 40 miles per gallon.
And they have using this all over Europe at the present time, aren't they?
Oh, they love it. Yeah. Well, they started working on the Common Rail diesel instead of going to the hybrid. They just thought it was a much better way to go. But in addition to that, I've been checking out the HHO, the H2O hydrogen fuel cells, which in some instances will double the mileage. So if you put that fuel cell, which you're using water, something to get the reaction going, and you add the hydrogen to the diesel fuel, and if you can double the mileage, you're up to 80 miles per gallon.
All right. Do you have any comment at all on that, Charlie?
I'm on the understanding that there are currently 80-plus mile per gallon certified vehicles in Europe that are turbocharged diesel. Volkswagen has one of those, and a friend of mine actually drove one here. They're not certified here yet.
Right.
There are significant diesels going to be coming into our market that will meet our standards more than likely next year. So the significant increases in performance and mileage from utilizing the diesel and the turbo diesel is more than likely going to be in our market next year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, California is going to be the most difficult one to get it into. You'd have to go to Nevada right now if you wanted one of the diesels that Mercedes makes. But you're right, a turbocharged Common Rail diesel with the hydrogen fuel cell added, and I can see 100 miles per gallon easily.
Well, the addition of hydrogen to either gasoline or diesel engines, I have been hearing that situation does enhance performance and mileage, and that's an add-on. It can be utilized actually as an add-on device or as a manufactured device. And you're right, they're generating that out of a water supply by generating electricity on board to have a hydrogen enhancement to the fuel.
No, because then basically you're going to have to inform me, because I'm a novice at this. Then there's not a tank of hydrogen on board, but this is some sort of a fuel cell that they actually manufacture the hydrogen on board the car?
Yes.
My understanding is they're using an electrical battery-generated diffusion of a small quantity of water into hydrogen and using that as an enhancement to the fuel that's being used, either gasoline or diesel or ethanol or whatever it happens to be, and are able to get an enhancement in performance emissions by the addition of a small quantity of hydrogen. And my understanding is that Arnold Schwarzenegger has one of those cars, and a friend of mine in a laboratory has actually tested that vehicle.
How expensive would those be to produce? Do you have any idea?
I am hearing that aftermarket, they're like a couple of $1,000 per unit, something like.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Jim. I think that's a fascinating information. There's a lot of technology out there that certainly is not something the oil companies would necessarily want. They don't want something that's going to give us more mileage because they want, of course, to honestly believe they're part of this movement to really run the price of oil up so they can impoverish the American people and transfer our wealth to China and other countries throughout the world. But anyway, thanks very much for calling. I really appreciate it.
Quite all right.
God bless. And, of course, hang on there, Charlie. We'll be back in just a moment here to wrap up our program right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Charlie, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, sometime maybe we could do something about the Smart Check program because there's some really fascinating stuff going on there.
Now, what program is that?
The Smart Check program where people need to get their cars tested in order to renew their license. We have major business interests wishing to move in and significantly orchestrate this transition to the new system of the hydrogen economy. So I believe that people sharing that the corn ethanol is the basis for our gasoline prices and our food prices, and that general discussion going on in the public can supply information to the governor that he's going to do something here, or he's going to fall out of favor, and he's going to get recalled just like his predecessor if he doesn't do something to give us some relief from us being raped at the pump and at the grocery store.
All right, fine. So basically, what would you like our listeners to do?
I would like for them to contact their elected official, to contact the media, to share this information that it's corn ethanol that's driving all the money out of our wallets and the people that have more, they just want our money, and that this can be corrected immediately with enough support mechanism where Arnold has to act.
No. Basically, what you'd like to do is get some way for Arnold to put out a directive saying we will not allow corn ethanol to be used in our gasoline here in the United States?
Here in California, that's correct.
Right.
He has every right to do that. He is in charge of environmental issues for the state of California, and the only thing that can take this away from his pals with the money, he sent his secretary of Cal EPA to China on Earth Day to sign a memorandum of agreement on providing carbon credits out of the California system to fund the corporate business in China. So without some serious public support, it isn't going to happen.
Now tell us, Charlie, what are we talking about? How much money are they going to be spending over in China for carbon credits? Is it really just a transfer of funds for the California taxpayers to the ruthless regime there in China? What are we talking about?
The numbers that I have seen are $7 trillion a year.
Well, now, wait a minute. We don't have $7 trillion. Our whole budget
is on a worldwide basis.
Okay, fine. But how about for California? How much are we going to be sending there?
More than we can imagine. Trillions of dollars. Well, the discussions.
I'm talking about California. How much are they going to spend?
I would guess 10% of the national issue. And they were talking on the bill before Congress over the time period to 2050 of $45 trillion.
All right. Thank you very much. Good night. God bless. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye. Well, that was Charlie Peters, and of course Charlie Peters said that he wanted people to get hold of their legislators and get hold of the governor and talk to them about this program which he's describing, where, of course, we are going to be buying carbon credits from communist China. Of course, China doesn't have any carbon credits, not even a part of the Kyoto Protocol. It's the biggest polluter in the world. It's simply a matter of transferring money from the United States to a ruthless regime in China. Now, if what Charlie says is true, and we're talking about massive infusions of money from not only the budget here in California, but from the United States and throughout the world into communist China, it is an example of creating the best enemies money could buy. If you've not yet seen my talk with the DVD of my interview with Professor Anthony Sutton, The Best Enemy Money Could Buy, that's The Best Enemy Money Could Buy. Why, you really need to get that. We also carry his book, The Best Enemy Money Could Buy. We carry the book entitled The Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, and of course we have a little pamphlet entitled The Communist-Capitalist Alliance. And until the American people begin to understand that there really is a very close working relationship between the people who covertly control our government and the communist governments throughout the world. I mean, who drilled all the oil wells for the Russian communists? Why, the United States, and that's really covered in this communist-capitalist alliance, and how we funded communism in Russia and China, in Rhodesia, and throughout Africa and Asia. We funded it since its very inception. We need an enemy, and now, of course, we have the enemy of international terrorism. What is happening as far as oil is concerned is, I believe, a real tragedy. If you want to understand what's going on, let me suggest that you get my four-tape or four-CD set called The Oil Deception. That's The Oil Deception. And then, of course, you would want to go up on my webpage and pull down my September and October 2005 newsletters on peak oil and peak oil 2. And if you don't have access to a computer and you get any of our products, you can request those letters and we'll be glad to send them to you along with whatever you get. So if you'd like to get those newsletters, give us a call. If you get something else, you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get the talk on the forbidden secret, because nothing going on today makes any sense unless you understand that there are powerful spirits or forces working in the background, and they've been around for 5,000 years, and the forbidden secret's been around for 5,000 years. It's about time, of course, that the people understood what's going on, and of course, the forbidden secret is being popularized by Oprah Winfrey and by Larry King and by Jim Carrey and other Hollywood dignitaries. Why are they popularizing it at this time in history when previously it was worth your life to disclose the secret? Because I believe we are living in that time prophesied in history where these things are coming to pass. You need, of course, to get our four-tape set up by Constance Cumby, going into the background of the New Age and this new spiritual movement. You need to get the DVD we have with Constance called The Emergence. That's The Emergence. You need to get the DVD, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and the sequel to that, Riddles in Stone, The Secret History of the Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. All of these and so much more is available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we ask you to go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, where you can pull down our newsletters, watch many of our videos, and, of course, we're even adding another section called Other Videos or New Videos. And then, of course, you can listen to our programs there 5 hours a day on the Internet. And your job is to get other people to begin listening to these programs and hopefully beginning to understand we're involved in a truly spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And what is going on today is not accidental, it's intentional. And then, of course, we're going to be back here tomorrow evening at the same time, but we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.